This is Impeachment, a daily podcast from WNYC. I'm Brian Lehrer. It's Thursday, December 19th. Coming soon to the United States Senate, the trial of Donald Trump. But we don't know how soon. The next chapter, after Trump was impeached by the House last night, got opened right away when Speaker Nancy Pelosi announced that she would not send the articles of impeachment to the Senate right away.
We have legislation approved by the Rules Committee that will enable us to decide how we will send over the articles of impeachment. We cannot name managers until we see what the process is on the Senate side, and I would hope that that will be soon, as we did with our legislation, our Resolution 660, to describe what the process would be. So far, we haven't seen anything that looks fair to us. So hopefully it will be fairer.
Most at issue so far, whether the Senate will call fact witnesses, including crucial ones the president is preventing from testifying, like John Bolton and Mick Mulvaney. With me now, New York Times columnist David Leonhardt, who's been following the impeachment process closely and weighing in with his opinions. Thanks for joining us on this historic morning after, David. Welcome to WNYC.
Good morning, Brian. Thanks for having me.
Do you want to just acknowledge the moment first? Like, we all knew it was coming, and yet it's still a shock in a certain way when it actually comes. Donald Trump is impeached.
It still is a shock, and whether you get your news on a phone or on a radio or a TV, or you still get print newspapers delivered to you, to see the words or hear the words Trump impeached. My family this morning was comparing the front pages of the Washington Post and the New York Times, and it does. You know, you see that the in the print paper, you see the size of the font that you don't often see, and you hear people describing the historical nature of this. It does feel like, even if we know how it's going to end, it does feel like one of those events, like Trump's election, probably the first since then, that decades from now we will think back as a real point in history that we will long remember.
And I'm curious if you're finding the impeachment in the narrow form the House Democrats gave it less than satisfying, because I see you wrote in your newsletter today, he was impeached on only two counts, but President Trump has violated his oath of office in so many other ways as well. You cite lying constantly, obstructing justice, encouraging criminal behavior, corruptly profiting off his office, refusing to defend the United States against foreign attacks, and more. So does it seem like all the Democrats have talked about the last 3 months is Ukraine devoid of context?
Well, I mean, I'm going to be a little bit of a broken record on this persuasion point. I mean, impeachment is a political process inherently. It's supposed to be. And so I actually thought the Democrats were right not to impeach Trump after the Mueller report, because although I blame Mueller for his timidity and his weakness in the way he wrote the report, that's the way he wrote the report. And I think coming out of that, which was such a letdown to many people, and impeaching him afterwards, I think would have been a politically really tough sell. Then Ukraine happens, and I think they had to impeach him after Ukraine. Because it was clear that he's trying to cheat. He is cheating in this election campaign we're already in. And if you just turn a blind eye to that, it encourages more of it. And it was clear that Americans were more open to the idea of impeaching him. Once, though, we get into the last few weeks, and to my disappointment, the parade of witnesses on Ukraine really didn't seem to move public opinion at all. I then did wonder, well, should they, even if they weren't going to open up everything, should they have at least held more hearings into some of the other ways he's obstructed justice? And I'll confess, I thought about that again this morning, because if Nancy Pelosi is saying we aren't going to send these articles over to the Senate unless they give us rules that we like, it's not clear what kind of leverage she has. And I think it actually would be better if Democrats were spending this extra time holding hearings into Trump's other offenses rather than this sort of odd limbo.
Huh.
So I'm quite torn about it. I don't think they should impeach him for the longer list just because he deserves it. I think they are right to take into account the politics of the situation.
One newsworthy fact from last night's votes almost the entire big group of moderate Democrats who got elected last year, defeating Republican incumbents in swing districts, mostly suburban districts, where impeachment has not been so popular. Almost all of them hung together, like in the New York, New Jersey area, Max Rose, Mikey Sherrill, Antonio Delgado, Andy Kim, and others. They took the tough vote. Only two out of the whole group of dozens didn't, Colin Peterson of Minnesota and Jeff Van Drew of New Jersey, who's changing parties. How much do you credit Pelosi for this solidarity, and what else do you think went into it?
Oh, I credit Pelosi a lot. I mean, she is the most effective modern Speaker of the House. It's not really even close, in part because there haven't really been other effective modern speakers. Paul Ryan, John Boehner were not particularly effective. But she is extremely effective at holding together her caucus and at understanding her caucus, right? She took the criticism for not impeaching Trump from the left earlier this year, and she understood now she could move. I mean, she's not perfect, as I said. I don't really yet, this idea of holding back the articles of impeachment is not completely clear to me how that helps the Democrats. Maybe she has a strategy that she hasn't yet made evident is going to work out. But I also credit the members of Congress who took these votes. I mean, those are not easy votes, and they did the right thing. I mean, he deserves to be impeached, and even if the leadership's decision about when and how to do it should reflect politics, for individual members, in the end, they have to make a decision about how to vote, and they did the right thing.
One Republican became an independent over Trump Ukraine, Justin Amash of Michigan, an original Tea Party member and libertarian. Now there's talk of the Democrats maybe making him an impeachment manager for the Senate trial, which means he would help present their case to the Senate. But other than Justin Amash, the Republicans held together too yesterday. Is that astonishing to you any more than the Democratic unity?
I'm not sure if I've lost my capacity for astonishment at Republican members of Congress basically bending to Trump and just doing what's in their best short-term political interests. And I do think, look, if there is an impeachment trial in the Senate, I think the Democrats absolutely should name Justin Amash one of the impeachment managers. I think Democrats made a real mistake when none of the legal experts they called to the Judiciary Committee hearings were conservative legal experts. There are conservatives who are aghast at Trump's behavior and believe he should be impeached and removed. And one of the things that psychology teaches us is it's not just what you are arguing, but it's maybe even more importantly who is making the argument. And think about it, if you're a progressive on the other side of things, would you be more likely to be persuaded of an argument by someone who shares your views about most things, or would you be more likely to be persuaded by a conservative? And so Justin Amash is not a member of the Republican Party anymore, as you just mentioned, but he is really conservative. And so they really should have him be one of the impeachment managers.
I think George in Brooklyn has a thought on why they finally focused on impeachment after Ukraine, after resisting for so long. George, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling in.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I've just been trying to understand like why it's so narrow and why now as opposed to before, and I just think the reason it included the those moderate freshmen is just because it finally touched on the national security apparatus, that like this idea of like, does it hurt our national security to bribe Ukraine? It's like that's the only thing that could whip the votes, and crude racism, profiteering, those have become normalized, and so they can't. It doesn't produce the political will. That has nothing, almost has nothing to do with popular opinion, like with what people think. It seems to me that they had to, in the words of your guest, impeach him after Charlottesville. How is that? It's completely impossible to defend that. Like, but it just didn't touch on the more important political powers that be.
George, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Call us again. Valerie, also in Brooklyn. You're on WNYC. Hi, Valerie.
Hi. I am ecstatic, because what I see is a convicted criminal. He's out there as a convicted criminal for all the world to see. That's my interpretation of it. Now, if he wants to be acquitted or looked at in a different way, the Senate has to really try the case. If they're not going to try the case, then he stands convicted forever. So as far as I'm concerned, if Nancy doesn't want to send it over, don't. Because then he stands convicted for all the world to see for all time.
Valerie, thank you so much. Call us again. So, David, we heard the speaker in the first clip say, hopefully it will be a fair trial. What does she consider a fair trial? Listen.
This is what I don't consider a fair trial. That Leader McConnell has stated that he's not an impartial juror, that he's going to take his cues, in quotes, from the White House, and he is working in total coordination with the White House counsel's office.
And yes, McConnell has said that. He has also said he doesn't consider himself an impartial juror. This is a political process. Here's that.
This is a political process. There's not anything judicial about it. Impeachment is a political decision. The House made a partisan political decision to impeach. I would anticipate we will have a largely partisan outcome in the Senate. I'm not impartial about this at all.
So, David, does the Constitution have something to say about this, or is it vague?
Well, it's vague in part, but I don't have a problem with him admitting he's not impartial. I mean, of course he's not, right? The senators weren't impartial when Bill Clinton was impeached, and if they were, how is it that the vote would have broken along such partisan lines?
Mm-hmm.
What you hope as a citizen is that senators are able to balance their partiality with the facts of the case. And what I think is worrisome in this case is that there's absolutely no sign that Republicans are doing so. As my colleague Brett Stevens, who, as your listeners probably know, is very conservative, said, look, the Republicans have never even talked about the idea that they might censure Trump, which is very different from what Democrats talked about around Bill Clinton. There's just no sign that Republicans are looking at the facts in this case. They trotted out about 7 or 8 different defenses of Trump, many of them conflicting yesterday. And so this is a political process. I don't have a problem with McConnell acknowledging it. I do have a problem with where he is ending up in terms of the balancing, the politics of this, and the scale of Trump's wrongdoing.
Can you explain to people just starting to understand the next steps what Speaker Pelosi was talking about in the first clip? What comes next, and what is this range of different ways or how they can send the articles of impeachment to the Senate?
It's a little bit similar to a bill in which a bill needs to pass both houses of Congress and then be signed by the president. So if one house of Congress passes a bill, then they send it over to the other side. And there are a bunch of procedural steps that cause that to happen. In the case of impeachment, it's not identical. In the case of impeachment, the House has to go first, right? The House is the one that impeaches, which is effectively an indictment. And then the Senate is the one that hears the trial. And so although they have impeached him, Pelosi's basically saying that she might not send it over until she feels better about the specifics of the trial that the Senate and McConnell are going to follow. She really doesn't have that much leverage here. And so the question is she just trying to call attention to the fact that this is going to be an unfair process? Maybe she's trying to do that. But in the end, we know how this is going to end up. There are a few senators whose votes will be interesting. Doug Jones, a Democrat from Alabama. Joe Manchin, a Democrat from West Virginia. You can imagine Kristen Sinema from Arizona. You can imagine them voting to acquit. And then there are a few Republicans you could imagine voting to convict. Susan Collins from Maine, Cory Gardner from Colorado. At this point, I actually think it's more likely that a Democrat would vote to acquit than a Republican would to convict. Huh.
But a very big fact to keep our eye on, I think, is that it only takes 51 votes in the Senate to call the witnesses who the Democrats are trying to get to testify, John Bolton, Mick Mulvaney especially, to testify. We talk about 67 needed to convict, and presumably they'll never get to there, but we don't know if they'll never get to there. 53 Republicans in the House, meaning they would need 20 to flip and all the Democrats to hang together in order to actually convict and remove Donald Trump. But with all 47 Democrats and independents likely to vote at least for rules that call the witnesses, it'll only take four Republicans from swing states who might feel the risk of opposing that is bigger than the risk of embracing it, calling the witnesses. So the 51 vote versus 67 vote number changes the politics dramatically. And I'm curious how you see the Democrats pushing for that. That's definitely part of what Pelosi is talking about.
Yes, it is. I mean, I mentioned a few minutes ago that Speaker Pelosi is extremely effective at keeping together her caucus. So is Senator McConnell. And I mean, you also might have imagined that a few Republicans would have agreed with Democrats that Merrick Garland, Barack Obama's Supreme Court nominee, at least deserved a hearing. And McConnell essentially held them all in line. And so it's going to be hard to peel off four Republicans to get them to vote for this. But you're right. It's not the same bar as convicting him, either in numbers or in the sort of argument. And you could imagine that there would be some Republicans who would say, look, I'm going to vote to acquit, but it would help me with my constituents to seem a little bit more like a moderate, that I'm really weighing the arguments here, and that some of them might welcome the chance to be seen as pushing for a different kind of trial, and that McConnell wants them to be reelected, so he might be willing to throw them a bit of a bone. And yeah, I could see things like that happening here.
And then if John Bolton comes and testifies and repeats what he's been quoted saying, that in that July 10th meeting in the White House with Trump people and Ukrainians, the shakedown was already underway, and Bolton said, I'm not going to be part of any drug deal that Mulvaney and Sondland are cooking up, and he reveals that the president directed the whole thing, which the impeachment hearing so far did not establish, then boom, who knows what could happen?
Yeah, I think that's all true, and I recognize I'm sounding somewhat cynical here, but I think that if Bolton were open to that, we might have already seen him in this process. So it's all of it is possible, and the Democrats are absolutely right to push for it, because one of the things is you need to push even for unlikely things when it's the right thing to do and it could help your side politically. But my expectations at this point for the Senate trial are fairly low.
You singled out this piece of Republican rhetoric from yesterday in defense of President Trump. It's Congressman Barry Loudermilk of Georgia.
Before you take this historic vote today, 1 week before Christmas, I want you to keep this in mind. When Jesus was falsely accused of treason, Pontius Pilate gave Jesus the opportunity to face his accusers. During that sham trial, Pontius Pilate afforded more rights to Jesus than the Democrats have afforded this president in this process. I yield back.
So out of like 11 hours of speeches yesterday, David, why did you single out that?
I mean, the sheer ridiculousness of it. There were also comparisons of this impeachment to Pearl Harbor. And so, I mean, I think that the fact that if that is the argument that Republicans are making, it gives you a sense of just how weak the defense is. If they had a better argument than comparing him to the crucifixion of Jesus Christ, surely they would use it. And yet they're using one of those. There was an excellent, I cited this in the newsletter as well, there was an excellent response on Twitter from a Jesuit priest who kind of very briefly walked through the actual comparison of how Jesus Christ was treated and how President Trump has been treated, which I thought was an appropriate response.
Trump himself was doing a rally in Michigan when the news of the impeachment broke last night. Here's 10 seconds of his reaction.
It doesn't really feel like we're being impeached, do you? The country is doing better than ever before. We did nothing wrong.
You know what I find interesting there, David? Did you notice that he used the royal we? It doesn't feel like we were impeached. That's evidence. Do you know why?
I do, actually, but you should spin it out because I don't want to guess wrong.
One of the things from the phone call is, do us a favor, though. And Republicans made a big thing of saying, he didn't say do me a favor, though. He said, do us a favor, though. The country's been through a lot. And Democrats have been saying, well, the president uses the royal we, uses we when he means me. Do us a favor means do me a favor. And there he was using the royal we, even at that moment. He said, didn't feel like we were impeached.
Yep. And it was like, it was his first response, too. So it was pretty amazing.
Evidence. David Leonhardt, New York Times columnist. Thank you so much for so much time today. Great conversation.
Brian, thanks for having me.
Earlier in this series, we took phone calls from listeners who proposed articles of impeachment. Now we're inviting calls from listeners who do not think Trump should be removed from office. We'll give you the phone number in a minute. Here's one that came in after the House voted to impeach last night.
My name is David Nywood from New Jersey. I do not believe that that Trump should be removed from office simply because the Democrats have not done a sufficiently good job to take the Republicans' concerns and negate them. And that leaves this as unipartisan. Trump has done more than enough, and the Democrats need to make their case better, so that this is a bipartisan issue.
If you are anyone who does not want to see Trump removed from office after being impeached by the House for any reason, call in and tell us why. Leave your voicemail at 844-745-TALK. That's 844-745-8255 or 844-745-TALK, and maybe we'll use yours on the podcast. Impeachment, a daily podcast, is excerpted from my live daily radio show, which we also invite you to listen to. It's The Brian Lehrer Show, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, streaming live then at WNYC.org. See you tomorrow.